You feel all right? You feel warm? Right. Good.
Hi, everybody. My name is Mark McFall, and you are listening to the podcast dedicated to Led Zeppelin, Zeppfan. So today is episode 16. If you listened to the last episode, episode 15, you'll know that we had James Cook and Eric Levy on to discuss the Peter Whitehead films from 1970, Royal Albert Hall, and the Bath Festival. This episode is actually a part two. Since we talked so much last episode about the Royal Albert Hall films, this episode, of course, we're talking about the Bath Festival. So if you haven't listened to episode 15, please do. It's an amazing breakdown of the journey of this film, the Royal Albert Hall film, and the drama that it went through from, you know, being sold to court dates. And in the end, it ended up on the Led Zeppelin DVD from 2003. I definitely recommend checking that out after you listen to the podcast. And as a bonus, please listen to the end of this podcast as we have an exclusive screener copy of the Peter Whitehead films from the Bath Festival. So what does that mean? Well, we know this footage has already been on YouTube, some of it, right? I think we have 20 minutes on YouTube, but there's a lot more of it. So Kino Library was kind enough to give us a screener copy so we could do research on this film and make this podcast as informative as possible for you. So we thank Kino Library greatly. With that being said, listen to the end. We're going to break down all the film, all the footage that's available. We'll talk about all that. And it's going to be a huge treat. All right. If you need to reach out to me, contact at zeppfan.com. Check out zeppfan.com for all your memorabilia. We have over 6,000 items on display. Check it out. It is the largest memorabilia display on the internet. I'm sure you'll see something you'll like. I think that's it. Thank you for listening. Let's go. Episode 16. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the much anticipated part two of our deep dive into the controversial and captivating journey of the Peter Whitehead Led Zeppelin 1970 films from the Royal Albert Hall and Bath Festival. In our previous episode, James Cook and Eric Levy took us on the unforgettable journey as they opened up and shared the fascinating 30 plus year story that the Royal Albert Hall film underwent before it eventually was released on DVD in 2003. Today, they are back again, ready to delve into the captivating world of the Peter Whitehead Led Zeppelin film from the Bath Festival, June 28, 1970. So, James, Eric, it's a pleasure to have you back again. How are you both doing today?
We're very good. Thank you for having us back. A two-parter is a rare episode format for you. So it's much appreciated.
Right. This is going to be like a weekly thing for all of us. We're all just going to gather and talk.
Part 3, part 4.
Regardless if we have listeners or not, we're just going to do it.
Yes. You know, we could just get on here and talk about Led Zeppelin for 3 hours, and I'm sure people would still listen.
Right. And I could do it without even recording. I do that right. With every conversation I ever have with anybody, too. Since our last podcast focusing on the Royal Albert Hall footage, has anything new come to mind that you wish you had shared in our previous episode?
Yeah, so I've made a couple of updates to the story secretly.
And impressive. Okay.
And I'm hoping to like point them out at some point because I hate to like stealth edit things. Number one is Bill Kerbishley, who was Pageant Park's manager, has denied basically being quite forceful in a meeting with Mark Hayward, who bought the Royal Albert Hall footage. And for a spokesperson, Bill Kerbishley says he doesn't remember ever meeting Mark Hayward, which is interesting. Very specific wording. He doesn't say he never met him. He just says he never recalls meeting him.
Right.
So I've put that in. You know,
I think that's a proper legal term of saying that.
Yes. And that took him 2 weeks to come back with that email, which was interesting. And the other thing which I want to update in the story is Neville Crozier, who was one of the guys who basically recorded Royal Albert Hall professionally. He had a read of the article when it came out and watched the Royal Albert Hall footage back. He hadn't seen it in so long.
Wow.
And it jogged his memory. And he said something which for me answers something I've always wondered, which is you'll see Robert Plant sings into a couple of mics. There's one microphone taped to another.
Yeah. Specifically,
and that's
yeah.
What they did. They Neville and his colleague, they taped the mics together as an ad hoc way of getting their feed into the recording thing. That's what they did. And I believe it was Neville who taped the microphone onto the album, and that jogged his memory. Like, oh yeah, that's like how we operated in those days. And I've always wondered why there were those two mics.
Yeah, exactly.
And that was why. And he explained that to me in an email.
Oh, that's incredible. That's incredible. Eric, anything comes to mind?
Not that I can think of. I think in terms of the recent developments, I think James covered it really well. On the subject of the double mics, it's actually, I don't think it's the first time that Robert Plant had done that. If there are pictures from the Olympia in Paris in October 69, the one that was on the Led Zeppelin 1 Super Deluxe release, and there's pictures, and I think there's a picture of Robert Plant actually holding two microphones to his thing, because they were recording the FM radio feed that, you know, got bootlegged and then came out in 2014. So I guess that's how they were doing it too. So I guess like being able to synchronize synchronizing the feed from the soundboard into the multi-track, I guess, wasn't as sophisticated as it was by, I don't know, How the West Was Won,
right,
or even Japan. When you look at those pictures, Robert only has one mic. But no, that's, I think it was really cool that James came back to me and said, hey, like, you know, shared the story with a couple of people, came back to me with a couple of pieces of feedback. And it's like, when you're there and you go back and you watch the footage, it just, you know, the memory just starts
put the pieces together,
exactly,
to the puzzle, as they say. Yep,
exactly. Yeah. So it was really cool that Neville was able to remember, hey, we double taped the mics. And when James first reached out, he was like, oh, I don't remember anything. Maybe John Bonham's on stage, I don't know. And now he's like, oh yeah, right, we did that and that. But it's really cool how putting the story together kind of brings all the people that haven't really spoken their part in it yet. Mm-hmm. And they finally get to say, hey, this is what I did. I did this. And putting the whole story together, I think, is really, really great. So excited to delve deep into Bath.
Right. Yeah. With the taping of the mics, that means one of them is used for their feed. Is that what you're saying, James and Eric?
Yeah. My understanding, and I'll defer to Eric because Eric's the world expert on this, is one is for like in the room, right? In the hall that goes to the sound.
It goes to the amplifiers and goes to the audience and stuff.
Right. And then the other goes direct into the truck outside, basically, the recording. And that's why they had two mics. There was probably some way that they could have split it and just used one mic, but just for ease of setting it up, just tape them together. Like, I like that.
Exactly.
Can't go wrong with duct tape. Let's dive into the Bath Festival, because you guys did a remarkable job talking about Royal Albert Hall last week. And I, after doing the episode, after editing, I went and watched it again. And it is cool because you do see the cameraman. And I think the image that I used for the thumbnail for the podcast, you could see the cameraman right in front of Robert. And it's funny because I sent that to Eric, and Eric's like, oh, here's a different angle of that shot. I'm like, oh my gosh, this guy's
nuts. Yeah, it's stirring a whole lot of love.
He knows exactly where it's at.
You see Ernie with his little camera facing up, and he has this huge fucking lens on it. It's really cool to see.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And that's a good thing to flag, actually, is that's the sort of cameo, right? Is it's the same guy who did the amazing filming of Royal Albert Hall from the front row, Ernie Vince. He was at Bath Festival months later. He's that guy, you know, doing that filming. So Peter Whitehead kept that one cameraman, brought him along to Bath Festival. So it's the same guy you catch glimpses of. He does it. And I think that for me is the biggest white whale, is I wish we'd managed to speak to Ernie. I believe he's still alive.
Right.
I emailed, I probably called him about 8 times, bless him. But he never picked up, and I really wish we'd spoken to him. He would have been amazing to chat to.
The Bath Festival, as mentioned, is from June 28th, 1970, a topic shrouded in mystery and speculation in the 90s, rumored to circulate about 45-minute segment. It was said to be dark footage, almost unusable. Then, you know, if we fast forward to 2022, this incredible full color film surfaces on YouTube. So we have James from Led Zeppelin News that dove deeper into this backstory of the Peter Whitehead film. Talk about what happened after Royal Albert Hall. How did Bath Festival come in effect?
Yeah, so after Royal Albert Hall, Peter Whitehead, he's brimming with enthusiasm, right? Like, we know, and this is from his witness statement, like, he wants to do a feature-length film about Led Zeppelin. Like, he's excited about this band. He'd sort of said that he didn't really want to do music filming. He'd done Top of the Pops, which is, you know, 2-3-minute clips. Like, he kind of moved on, works with Led Zeppelin, films Royal Albert Hall. He's like, hey, I want to film you backstage, in the studio, on stage. Like, he wants to do another
In Their Homes.
Charlie Is My Darling, which is this amazing Rolling Stones black and white film. I think it's a tour of Ireland, actually, back in the day. It's an amazing film. Came out, I think, 1966. That's what he wants to do. And Royal Albert Hall, for whatever reason, the band doesn't sign off on it. So he's like, well, let's do Bath Festival. You know, it's the next big show coming up, essentially. And the band agreed, there's a budget. And off he and Ernie go in a car to film Bath Festival.
Do we know if he reached out to Peter Grant was his contact, because you said they reached out to Led Zeppelin. I mean, who is he dealing with in the Led Zeppelin camp to get the authority to film?
Yeah, so there's a discrepancy here, which is interesting. So in his witness statement, Peter Whitehead says that he basically went to Stanley Dorfman, the producer who set up the Royal Albert Hall filming, and was asked to put together a budget to finish the filming, essentially, and sent that to Stanley Dorfman, who signed off on it and sent him the rest of the money. When I spoke to Stanley Dorfman, he said, look, I hired him to do Royal Albert Hall. We edited it. We signed off on it. I never spoke to him again. So as far as Stanley is aware, he wasn't involved in any subsequent filming. Peter Whitehead says he was. We know from a letter that Peter Whitehead didn't really like Peter Grant, which suggests there may have been some dealings between them. You can kind of imagine they might have clashed a little bit there.
Very interesting. Do we know how much he got paid to film Bath Festival?
We know what the budget was. I've got the article with me, actually. So he basically said it would cost £2,000 to finish the filming, almost to finish this film. And £2,000 back in like 1970 was not a tiny amount of money. Like he's wanting a fairly significant budget. He says that was signed off, the band sent the money, and that set them up for filming Bath Festival. We know that there was only Peter Whitehead and Ernie Vince filming. It was a fairly small film crew, so he got a lot of money for that.
In the previous episode, we talked about the Royal Albert Hall was essentially going to be filmed just for the band so they could see what they look like. What was the purpose of the filming for this Bath Festival? Was it for them to see what they look like in the daylight, or was there actually to be publicly released?
You know, like James said,
who you listen to, right? Like Peter White has got his story. Other people have different stories. I'll let you run through that, Eric.
Yeah. So like James said, the Royal Albert Hall footage was just for Led Zeppelin to... I'm going to start over. Like James said, there's a discrepancy in this as well, because, you know, if you listen to what Peter Whitehead said, he got hired. There was going to be a documentary made that was for the BBC. And the liner notes for the DVD mentions that it was for a TV special on the BBC. And I think there were rumors about that. So it's weird how that got substantiated. Yet we go to Stanley Dorfman, and Stanley Dorfman was like, hey, Led Zeppelin just wanted to see themselves on stage. That was it. And so if you believe Stanley Dorfman, who knows why? I mean, it must have just been that Peter Whitehead was, like James said, enthused. He was excited and he went, no, let's make this documentary. Let's do it. And I've always gotten the sense, especially knowing what we know now, that Led Zeppelin just didn't really care. I think it was like, okay, great. I mean, yeah, this could be pretty cool.
Yeah.
Let's film this. But it's interesting because they didn't, you know, they didn't hire Neville. They didn't hire the Pi recording truck to record the Bath Festival, as far as we know. That might be something that may be interesting to ask. I don't think Neville would remember it, though. But we only know that they recorded, jumping a little ahead, they only recorded audio as the film crew, and Led Zeppelin never made an effort to record the show. So that's also interesting. This is just what we know so far, that only the film crew had recorded audio. Led Zeppelin did not, which makes it interesting to me that I feel like it was a very Peter Whitehead-driven project versus a Led Zeppelin goes to Peter Whitehead, hey, film us at the Bass Festival, because we know Jimmy Page, if he's going to film Led Zeppelin, he's going to have good audio to go with it. And the fact that they didn't makes me think that, you know, Peter Whitehead was going to go film a little bit there and sort of maybe piece together a documentary, like having the Royal Albert Hall be like the centerpiece and then the Bath Festival sort of augmenting it, because you know, based on the footage that we've seen, this is just my opinion, based on the footage we've seen, it's just very fragmented and very jumps around a lot. It doesn't feel like a coordinated effort to film a concert. So I feel like it was very much a, let's just get a couple of shots at the Bath Festival and augment this Royal Albert Hall that we, you know, filmed in full. But without Peter Whitehead or without Ernie, it's kind of hard to know for sure.
Yeah, that's very interesting. We know with the Royal Albert Hall footage that Jimmy, Led Zeppelin, they brought in their own crew to record the show. So I've always been under the impression they would have recorded Bath, because this was a huge monument for them to play this gig, right? They're playing the big stage. They have that slot right there at Sunrise where they like it. It's interesting that this might have not been recorded by them.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting, because it's really the only coordinated filmed effort by the band besides the 8mm films that the Roadies would shoot at Sydney. But like I said, whenever Led Zeppelin would film themselves, whether it's the Royal Albert Hall, Madison Square Garden, even Earl's Court and Nebworth, where they were, I think, intending to use that footage for a TV special, they made sure there was multi-track audio being recorded because they wanted to make sure that they were at the highest fidelity and they wanted to be on the biggest screen possible and all that. But it's really interesting. And I think that fact that they didn't record audio, or that there's no evidence that they recorded audio, makes it, I feel, more of a Peter Whitehead's pushing the band to do this. Hey, this could be really, really cool. Let's get this footage, rather than let's film the entire concert like we did at the Royal Albert Hall.
Yeah. So having said that, we know in this amazing granular detail how Peter Whitehead recorded audio at Bar Festival, which was, you know, really interesting to piece that together thanks to this sort of handwritten letter that was in his archive that even allows us to identify the specific make of tape recorder that Peter Whitehead's film crew used to record Bath. For the audio specifically, yeah, so it was a, for the audio fans, a Nagra-free reel-to-reel tape recorder manned by a Douglas McIntosh, who remembers this in this amazing detail. He was a real sort of audio head. He's since died now, but he wrote this letter to Peter Whitehead 2003 and sort of does this inventory of, you know, I've got six reels of quarter-inch audio tape that I recorded at Bath, and I've got the original reels of the film as well. So he'd kept it all and sent it back to Peter Whitehead.
So do we know if the entire show was recorded then, even though they didn't film the entire show? Was the entire show recorded on audio?
So we don't know. The letter says...
There's always something.
Right.
Never perfect. Right.
Mark and I always call it the Zeppelin curse.
Yeah. Right.
But the letter mentions six rolls of quarter-inch tape. And my understanding of how recording Nagra audio worked back in the day, for people who don't know, think of it like the Beatles' Get Back sessions, where they had two people that were running cameras, and those cameras were hooked up to a Nagra recorder. And whenever the camera would turn on, there'd be a sync pulse, like a beep, whenever it turned on. So when you're in the editing bay, you can link up the audio and the video really easily, because whenever the beep is on the audio is when the camera flash is going to start. And then in theory, the video and audio should, quote unquote, be in sync. Mm-hmm. So based on my experience with the Beatles' Get Back footage, which where the audio is constantly ongoing, my thought is, hey, maybe they just, you know, laid the recorder out, they just let the audio roll, and the cameras would move around, they'd, you know, turn on, turn off, and then whenever Peter Whitehead or whoever would be editing it a couple months later, they could just look at the sync pulse and go, okay, here's Immigrant Song, here's Heartbreaker, here's whatever. But the interesting thing is, when they filmed it, a couple of minutes in, Ernie Vince, I think, was like, screw this. This is limiting my movement, because he has this camera that's connected to the recorder.
Hey.
So he disconnects it at some point.
Oh.
So if they go back into the editing bay, it's harder then to sync this footage up, because now you have silent footage of Robert Plant's shoes on stage. There's nothing to really indicate like what's going on, and they don't have this sync pulse. And that was also the issue with The Song Remains the Same.
Right.
But yeah, it's really, really interesting how everything in classic Zeppelin fashion just starts unraveling apart and makes it as difficult as possible for everyone involved.
What about the licensed footage that's on YouTube? Does that have sound on it? I know it's silent. So are they offering it with sound? Because can they do that? Because that's, I believe that's syncing rights. And I'm not sure if they would have the legal side of it to offer it with sound, because Zeppelin technically owns the music.
Yeah, it's a really good question. So a lot of people, when that footage came out, which was September last year, I remember the day really clearly, because my son was about a month old and I was trying to balance him on my lap while he was asleep and write an article about Bar footage. And I was like, this is a very surreal evening. And a lot of people at the time assumed that the audio was silent on YouTube for copyright issues, you know, because the band was going to do a copyright claim. My understanding, sort of having talked to people involved, is that wasn't the case. Actually, it was, they didn't have the audio. Which is interesting, because we know that in 2003, Peter Whitehead got that tape back from Douglas McIntosh. You know, he was emboldened by the outcome of this trial over the Royal Albert Hall footage, which basically asserted that, yes, Peter Whitehead owns that footage. Like, he was emboldened by that. He calls up Douglas McIntosh, who he worked with back in the day, 1970, says, hey, can you send me the Bar Festival stuff back? Peter Whitehead receives the audio and the film as well. At some point, they become detached, essentially. And it's my understanding that the audio basically isn't with that film anymore. Mm. It's somewhere, but it's not.
Ooh, okay. James, that's your next assignment. Hunt down that audio.
I love it.
It works.
How many cameras were used at Bath Festival? We know three were used at Royal Albert Hall, two for live, and some that, if I remember correctly, the third one was more for exterior shots and outside realm of the Royal Albert Hall and such. How many cameras were used at Bath Festival?
So it was just two. It was Peter Whitehead and Ernie Vince, the two main cameramen at the Royal Albert Hall. And from my understanding, based on what we see on YouTube, there are some moments where the two guys overlap, because there's a moment where Peter Whitehead is filming and he's filming the band, and you see Ernie with his camera up. So you can tell it's two cameras. And I think from what I can tell, that Peter Whitehead just kind of shot here, shot there, moves around. Yeah, exactly. Like the first shot, he's like stage left, kind of like, yeah, stage left. And then he goes like up behind, and he just kind of moves around and gets a bunch of like just what I think is just random B-roll. Mm-hmm. And I think based on what we have on YouTube, Ernie was the one that was actually shooting the band. He was on the stage with them, you know, getting close-ups, or maybe a little too close.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say close-ups.
Right.
The bottom of Plant's shoes. Let's see the solo.
Yeah, right. Like, let's see Jimmy playing. And he's just going around the side of the stage and just grabbing the footage. Like, and just to add on to what James said, I do remember that day where the footage came out, and it was you, Mark. You texted me or messaged me, and you sent me these links, and he's like, "Oh, what's this?" And I'm like,
"Yeah, I'm like, have you seen that?"
I'm like, "No."
So I literally heard the phone drop.
Right. Yeah. From halfway across the entire country. But And at this point, I was kind of out of it for a little bit. You know, it goes in and out. And as soon as I saw this footage, I was like, I flew to my laptop. I opened up my editing software. I grabbed the footage from YouTube, downloading it just in case it would be deleted. And I started syncing it. And I just remember the feeling I had when I lined up the crappy audience recording of the Immigrant Song with the footage, seeing it in motion and seeing it was like,
regardless somebody, of the sound. Yeah.
Yeah, for somebody who loves footage so much, like you, Mark, like seeing that for the first time is just mind-boggling. Like,
That clean of footage too. When you're looking at that and you're seeing Plant sing or Bonham, because you're so amazing with syncing up the drums, it literally gives you chills when you see it. Like, it's finally this is the holy grail you've heard about all your life, and it's here.
It's not the holy dark grail. Footage. It's the holy grail, and like, for Led Zeppelin fans, I mean, we have a ton of 8mm out there, but not much do we get like this perfect, clear on stage, seeing every, like, I love the shot where it zooms in on Bonham's floor tom and you see the drum key rattling on his thing. And it's just like you never see that clarity of detail in Led Zeppelin film before. And seeing that shot where Ernie kind of zooms out and it's all four of them playing Bring It On Home. Mind blow. I could watch the entire show just from that one angle. Incredible.
It definitely seems they filmed a lot of the audience too, because it seems like a lot of those roles. But I agree with you, just seeing that, and especially when they zoom out, it's, you know, because we've seen pictures, but the quality is so clear. And it's really interesting how the rumors as it being dark, and this is what I heard in the 90s too, because I've heard people that had it was dark, Jimmy didn't like it, but I can't imagine, the footage is really clear. So even with today's technology, it was still clear when they filmed it. So I don't know how that rumor came about. Maybe it was the transfer and so forth.
I think it partially could be that by the end of the show, it was getting dark, and maybe they filmed a little bit more after. Because from what James has found out, what's on YouTube may not be everything they filmed of Led Zeppelin. I have a feeling that maybe there was some footage that was shot later in the show. Maybe a little bit, and they saw that and went, "No, that's crap," because they were using daylight film, which is why it was so dark. They weren't adept for nighttime filming, and I'm wondering if they saw that and maybe some dark, crappy audience film, and was like, "No, like, we can't use this anymore." And also, like you said, Mark, like, back in 1970, we don't have the technology that we do now, and maybe the footage was subpar then. But then you look at it from a historical lens of a band that never documented themselves that well. It's just seeing this pristine, clear, like, you're on the stage watching them footage, and you're just like, are you kidding me? Right. Like, you think this is unusable?
What I was trying to find out and ended up accidentally getting these documents. So what I was trying to do was file a request for emails from inside the university that had Peter Whitehead's footage, trying to figure out what they did to recover it, because it was sort of announced in 2017 that it was visible. So I said, look, send me documents and emails about the Bar Festival film. Like, I wanted to see the email chain of people being like, hey, we've restored it, you know, come around to this room and see it or whatever, because I want to know sort of nerdily how they'd done it. And in the end, we get, you know, these original lab reports from 1970s. It was a happy accident. I'm still very curious, though, on how this film was sort of brought back to life, essentially.
And I think according to your article, the receipts that you had, it was 84 minutes of footage. Is that what it came out to be?
That's right. Yeah. And I'll let Eric sort of get into the weeds of sort of what was produced and when. But what we have essentially is Peter Whitehead's team going to a film lab in Soho. You know, this was Soho in the early 1970s. It wasn't the most amazing place to be. It's a lovely place to go now in London. But Peter Whitehead's office is next door to this lab, right? So they send it round and say, look, we want a print of all of this footage, like everything. We want a black and white print of all of our Bar Festival footage. And August 20th, 1970, they get the invoice back, which really helpfully details down like the exact amount of footage that was put into this print of everything, which allows us to calculate how many minutes of footage there was that they had to work with.
Yeah, and we don't know if it's all Zeppelin, if it's crowd, audience, backstage, because judging by those YouTube clips, there's a little bit of everything.
Yeah, I think we can sort of safely assume that there's not 84 minutes of Led Zeppelin, sadly. And there's a lot of
don't burst the bubble.
Random people in the crowd, Judy Felix wandering around. Like, there's a lot of backstage stuff, but you know what? It's kind of interesting. But what was interesting to me is the idea that there's other Bath stuff that we haven't seen that does exist, and probably someone has seen it somewhere. So when it came out, I emailed a man named Eric, who runs Contemporary Films, who has since died actually a few weeks ago, and said, hey, look, you know, you're controlling the licensing of Peter Whitehead's footage via Kino Library, put it on YouTube. And I said, look, is this it? Is there more to come? And he came back saying, yeah, there's probably more Bath. You know, we're still going through all the tins of footage. Yeah, there's a good chance there's more Led Zeppelin footage. Mm-hmm. You know, and that was a really interesting email to receive. And that's about as much as we know to this day on terms of how much footage there is, in that there's a bunch on YouTube. There's probably a bit more somewhere. People keep dying who are involved in this footage. It's a bit awkward, so there it is. There was a storage company that actually physically had the footage. The guy who ran that died. Eric, who ran Contemporary Films, who was licensing it, he died. Peter Whitehead died. It's a bit difficult to parse who is where with this.
Yeah, definitely. Anything to add to that, Eric? I know we talked a little bit about the audio and more of the footage and it being transferred. Anything else to add?
Yeah, I kind of wanted to go a little bit more in depth with sort of the actual filming and sort of the timeline from the June 28th to August to, you know, kind of going forward, kind of like what we did with the Royal Albert Hall. So Led Zeppelin shows up, they're there. Peter Whitehead is supposed to show up and film them arriving on a helicopter, very much like the Nebworth 1979 pictures of Jimmy coming down, which is really cool. But naturally, as things go in the Led Zeppelin world, Peter Whitehead is late, he's stuck in traffic, because there are all these cars coming into the festival. Obviously did not anticipate this, 200,000 people coming in. Mm-hmm. So he misses Led Zeppelin coming in, but eventually him and Ernie get there. Yeah. And they film Led Zeppelin backstage. And there's that amazing 5-minute clip of Robert and Bonzo and I think Richard Cole and some other people just lounging around backstage. And like, I just love, there's one shot, and I think it's the thumbnail of the video, of Robert Plant just kind of hanging out, and you see the clarity of his face and his new facial hair. And it's just like, you never see this, man. Yeah. Like, you never see this level of clarity and quality. Yeah. So it was really cool seeing him in their those outfits. Cause I think Robert had changed, cause he's wearing that like open shirt and then he's wearing the black like sweater at Bath, cause it was actually quite cold. So backstage happens, Peter Whitehead's going around, he's swimming the crowd, apparently a decent bit of the crowd, apparently, probably way more than he should have. He films Jimmy Page and Julie Felix hanging around, I think maybe with Charlotte Martin. Am I right about that, James?
I think so, yeah, I think so. I think she's around, like there's all these little cameos of random people, and you have to freeze frame and zoom in on it, which is quite fun.
And the funny thing too is that the Jimmy Page walking around is like within hippies at the Bath Festival. So like you're just watching all these like crowd, and then you just see Jimmy Page walking down, and he's wearing that like black shirt with the red collar that people have, I'm sure, seen before. It's really, really cool. But they film backstage, or he's filming around the festival. Led Zeppelin hits the stage. The cameras are there. They film what's supposedly around 20 to 30 minutes, based on what Steve Chibnall had said, that was about how much they filmed. And clearly it was a little bit here, a little bit there. Oh, let me move around. Let me get a shot here. Let me pan to the audience because I have no idea how to man a camera and film an actual music act. And so they have this footage here. They get about 8 rolls, I think is what it is. 8 rolls of film, which totals to about 84 minutes. It's not clear. Yeah, because I think we talked about this on the Royal Orleans forum, and there's a great member there who actually works in film archival things, mm-hmm. and kind of knows what he's talking about. And he had mentioned that the time code kind of looked like it may be from a Betamax tape. Not 100% sure on that. This is just, you know, people looking at the footage and kind of drawing their own conclusions from it. But I suppose it is possible that maybe when Peter Whitehead got the footage back in 2003, that he got it transferred and maybe put it on Betamax and the archive company had it or something, or maybe they just filmed it. Maybe they just transferred it directly from the film and digitized it. But going back to 1970, they film everything. And then in August 17th, Peter Whitehead goes to Document, which is right next to his office, and says, hey, develop the color rolls of film, these 8 rolls of 16 mil. And then I also want a full print in black and white. And James and I were going back and forth trying to figure out, like, why would he do this? And I think what we kind of settled on was that, hey, maybe he wanted Douglas McIntosh to go and edit it, and he didn't want to spend a lot of money on like a full color print that he could send to somebody. So he sent the black and white footage to Douglas, who had the audio, and he started to play around with it. And by the time that he was playing around with it, because he mentions in his letter that he was like playing around with titles and you know, all that kind of thing, that maybe Peter Whitehead kind of was fed up Led Zeppelin and Led Zeppelin wasn't getting back to them, so they scrapped it. Because Peter Whitehead wanted to, again, do a full hands-on documentary, filming them in the studio, filming them, you know, at home. And clearly that stuff never happened. So I think by the time that Douglas was going and kind of getting his hands dirty, Peter Whitehead was like, I don't care anymore. He had all the footage, which is interesting that he had the color footage and the black and white footage. I'm wondering that if he just used the black and white stuff to edit and then he just had the color stuff maybe as a reference. I don't know. We don't have enough information to know. And both people involved are dead. Mm-hmm. But I think this footage is sort of stored away with Douglas. And then we cut to 1994, which is really, really interesting because that's when Peter Whitehead writes that letter to the licensing company. And he mentions his bath film in the letter. So Peter Whitehead doesn't have the footage because it's with Douglas at this point, but he mentions that he has it. So I'm wondering if he just would have, hey, if they were interested in making this film, that he would have just written up Douglas and just gotten the footage from there. So,
yeah. 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 It's to pick up on one thing you mentioned there, like I expect it was a cost thing, like black and white, you know, because amazingly we got the invoice from 1970, which is that it cost £125 for the footage, which
that's
at the time, right, it's not cheap. And if it was color, it would have been even more. So, you know, he's doing it, I guess, for the editing process, you know, certainly at that point in 1970, they want to do something with the footage. It can't have been that dark because they, you know, spent £125 getting it processed.
What happened from there? 1994, they were talking about doing something with it. What's the next steps?
Yeah, so 1994, you know, he's talking about it. This is when Peter Whitehead's, you know, in discussions with Bill Kerbishley, who in effect is Led Zeppelin at that point, working for Page and Plant.
Right. At this point, are they talking Royal Albert Hall and Bath Festival at the same time? I mean, is it the same discussion?
It's not. So this was something I clarified with the folks who were sort of trying to do this deal in the 90s. And Royal Albert Hall was on the table because Peter Whitehead had it. You know, he had it in his cupboard. You know, you could watch it. You know, you could go and see it. It was clear what was in hand. Peter knew that he'd filmed Bath Festival. You know, he assumed it was a bit dark and maybe it wasn't usable. Yeah. It was on the Isle of Man. It was off the coast of the UK. It's not on the mainland, right? It's in Douglas McIntosh's cupboard, essentially. But Peter knew it existed, you know, and it's sort of mentioned in his letter, as Eric says. but it was Royal Albert Hall that the deal was done for in the 90s. That's what was sold, essentially. And that court case that sort of was resolved for the deal in 1999, that reaffirmed that, yes, it's Peter Whitehead, Lorimer Films, his company, that owned the copyright to it. We assume then that it's sort of off the back of that, a couple of years later, Peter Whitehead calls up Douglas, like, hey, Douglas, you know, long time. Do you still have that bar festival footage? Because Peter's now realizing he can make some money off of this. You know, this is now newly valuable to him. Douglas mentions in that letter, oh, I was interested to learn about this court case. You know, of course you own the copyright. You know, Douglas is reaffirming it.
Right.
What Douglas does is actually is send back the paperwork. You know, that's where these invoices come from. Douglas sent them back to Peter Whitehead. Douglas kept it all. Thank God for Douglas McIntosh. Peter Whitehead then gets all his paperwork with his Lorimer Films badge on it. He's got it all. And that's sort of what happens in 2003. And it sort of sits still from there, essentially, until Peter donates papers and film tins to De Montfort University in England, which is how we sort of start to learn about that footage.
And then from there, it goes to Kino Library. Is that how it gets on YouTube?
It's a, yeah. So the footage is separated from, this is my understanding, is the papers go to and stay at the Peter Whitehead archive at the university. The footage, however, is put into a licensing company, Contemporary Films, which then works with Kino Library. And this was kind of something interesting to unpick, because it's like, well, why has it emerged on YouTube randomly, you know, in September 2022? I say, is there a deal done for this? And the guy, Eric at Contemporary Films, said, no, you know, they just decided to put it up online, you know, just to get some interest in buying the footage. There was never an instruction. They didn't know that it was going to be there. They just decided, yeah, we'll just pop it on YouTube. You know, there was no announcement. It just sort of happened. And that's sort of what brings us up to today, essentially, is that footage is available for people to license. If you pay the money, you can use it.
Let's talk a little bit about what's on YouTube now from them. There's three clips, from my understanding, from the licensing company. One's about 5 minutes, one's almost 7 minutes, the other one's about 3.5 minutes. And I think you mentioned there may or may not be more footage, right?
Yeah.
Of this. And is
that's right.
Okay. I was going to ask Eric, you sync this footage up. How much of this available 15 minutes is of Led Zeppelin versus of the audience and such?
Or so I think we have about. So I think we have about 10 minutes or so based on what's on YouTube. There's a small piece that does overlap. Peter Whitehead is kind of filming all over. He's filming. He starts on the side of the stage as Led Zeppelin comes out on stage, and then he runs his way up behind by the end of Immigrant Song, and he's sort of just running around getting random shots here and there. And like I said, I think Ernie is the one that's actually on stage, actually, hey, you film the band, I film around, sort of thing. Like, you get the main coverage, I'll get the B-roll, sort of thing, even though they were kind of just filming B-roll in general. So we have about 10 or so minutes of it, just from Immigrant Song through That's the Way, from what we have footage-wise, and who knows if they filmed anything after. It's interesting because Steve Chibnall, who had seen this footage back in 2017, had mentioned seeing footage of John Bonham playing his hands on Moby Dick and Jimmy Page with his violin bow, which makes it really interesting to me because in the footage we have, that none of that shows up.
Yeah.
And in the first clip, you know, we have Immigrant Song, and then it ends with, I think the camera battery must have been dying, which is why the footage is so fast during That's the Way. I think he just put on like a tripod and just films behind the band. And it's just like this time lapse sort of thing. So I think the camera had ran out of batteries. So I'm guessing that's why Peter Whitehead didn't film more. But then you have Ernie Vince, and the footage we have on YouTube cuts in during Heartbreaker and ends during after Bring It On Home, I believe.
Right.
So it's very possible he filmed a lot more. And what's interesting to me is that, you know, we have this stretch of Heartbreaker to Bring It On Home, and then we have the full which may be the full footage from Peter Whitehead. And no point do we see Jimmy Page with his violin bow. There's a clip during it, but it's not obvious enough to somebody who doesn't know that, oh, that's the violin bow section. Like, you would think that you would have to see him with the bow, you know, bowing the guitar. We don't see any of that. And there's no footage of Moby Dick either. For the Moby Dick footage, I speculate he was looking at John Bonham banging the gong at the end of Days of Confusion.
And it could have been pretty dark at that point. So you mentioned the songs and you're kind of Immigrant Song to That's the Way, but let's kind of dive into each one of them. And are they on video? So we have Immigrant Song, Heartbreaker, Dazed and Confused, Bring It On Home, Since I've Been Loving You, Thank you, organ solo. And that's the way. So is all that on the YouTube clip one way or the
other? Not everything, but Since I've Been Loving You is there in some shape or form.
So the word from Steve Chipnall, who's this professor who saw that and sort of uncovered that footage and announced it, is the thing that's missing from YouTube is the Rushes shot after sunset. He says it's about 5 minutes. And he says, I recall there was, you know, Jimmy Page using a bow on his guitar. So it seems that perhaps that footage might be a bit darker if that's shot after sunset. Maybe that's not the best advert for licensing the film. So that's why it's not on YouTube. But perhaps it does exist if you've got the money to license it, essentially.
Right. Yeah. And from my understanding with the licensed footage, I believe there's more of it. It just, they're not going to put everything up on online. So if you have the chance to license it, I'm sure you have an option of seeing a lot more of it as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's an open question at this stage, whether we're going to see this in becoming Led Zeppelin. You know, we know the film timeline in the last we heard, it ends with Royal Albert Hall, you know, January 1970. You'd think that this amazing new footage has come out. You'd think it's in this.
You would hope. Yeah. And I think also with nowadays, documentaries aren't being made like they used to. In the 90s, you know, we had Behind the Music, Rockumentary, Legends. And so a lot of this footage would have come out one way or the other, but people aren't making documentaries like they used to. And I'm sure the price to buy this from them is not cheap, like any licensing company. So you'd have to put together a pretty darn good documentary to make your money back as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm hoping that we'll see something end of this year, Christmas time, around the coming.
Is that is this an exclusive, James? Is that what we hear?
Yeah, that's
James just announced December 25th in all theaters near you.
Yeah, look, what I've been told is there's likely to be some sort of movement around becoming Led Zeppelin around sort of holiday season 2023. You know, we know that there was a new cut of the film screened in April in the US. And I'm hoping that the bath footage is in there in amazing quality and that we'll all get to see it. I'm not going to promise it because that will be a fool's errand, but that's what I'm hoping.
Especially if they don't have audio for it, where it's be really nice silent footage, but you would really
do
something. Yeah, they would do something. Well, yeah, from my
imagine there's a medley or something. They'll find something creative, hopefully.
Yeah, and you would think they have to do something with this bath festival because there's so little professionally shot footage. They have to get this in there one way or the other.
Yeah, fingers crossed. I mean, also it raises the question, and I'm phrasing this very carefully, of, you know, if there is this missing reel of Royal Albert Hall footage, you know, maybe that might resurface at some point. Who knows?
Exclusive, James. Where are we at with the Bath Festival? What was the last thing we touched on? 94, talks in 2000, and then it just kind of went away and then ended up on YouTube. Is that where we're at?
Yeah, 2003, Peter Whitehead gets it back in the post, you know, and he just sort of, he sits on it. You know, we know that he had the audio reels. We know that he had very specifically Ernie Vince's film reels, you know, sent back to him by Douglas McIntosh. He's got it in hand. And then nothing really happens around that until he donates his archive. And then, you know, people at the university go through it and it's like, oh, wow, okay, we've got footage of Led Zeppelin here. You know, that's the next thing. At that point, it's silent footage. You know, between Peter Whitehead receiving it in 2003 and a donation being made, I believe 2016, that audio is sort of goes missing, essentially.
Right. And we still don't know. As we talked about earlier, we don't know where that audio is at.
No, I've not heard anything on where that Bath audio goes. We know it existed in 2003. We know there were those quarter-inch reels. We haven't heard where it's gone since then.
Well, good. I mean, that's a lot to unpack. As you know, and Eric knows as well, I'm a huge video guy, and just seeing this stuff in 2022 come out, it was just, you know, the perfect end. If I ever stopped collecting, it's like I seen Bath Festival, I'm good. So
yeah, it was an amazing, amazing day to see that. And I think there's still, you know, footage to come out and information to come out on that. It really is incredible footage. So credit to Peter Whitehead and Ernie Vince for filming that.
Yeah. And Peter Whitehead's passed, right?
Yeah, he died 2019. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, guys, for joining me again for part two. Anything else you want to wrap up on the Bath Festival? I think we touched on everything. You guys do an amazing job breaking it down. Anything else we need to touch on?
Yeah, well, one little shout out from me. Freddie Bannister's book. So Freddie Bannister was the promoter of Bath Festival, Worth Festivals. I believe it's called There Must Be a Better Way. It's a really good book if people want to seek it out. I believe the Bannister family sort of sells it. You can buy it online. essentially a collection of anecdotes of his sort of career in the music industry. And we sort of pulled from that in the article on the traffic situation, but it's definitely worth seeking out Freddie Bannister's book if you're interested in Bar Festival.
And I know Peter Grant's book has an interesting take on the August 11th from Freddie. So read about that as well. I don't know if that's in that book, but yeah, very cool. Eric?
So I will say the thing that I drew from this work that James and I had done was that Peter Whitehead had only filmed Led Zeppelin at the Royal Albert Hall and then at the Bath Festival. Because I know there are rumors that he had followed them on their American tour.
Yeah.
I think in one of the audience recordings of Baltimore, there's somebody who claims they see cameras everywhere. But from what I can tell, I don't think they did anything. Yeah. Like that. I think we'd see pictures of cameras. We'd see more substantiated evidence that Peter Whitehead was following them on tour. And we all know Led Zeppelin here. I doubt that they hired another film crew to come and follow them. And then that footage just goes missing. So I think in terms of what was done in 1970, I think it was just the Royal Albert Hall and the Bath Festival.
All right. Well, I think that wraps it up. I don't know what we're going to talk about next week. You guys let me know, okay?
Anytime you want to have us back.
It's a bit legally sensitive. Maybe not a podcast on that one coming down the line.
Right. As I always do with James, any stories coming up, anything we should be aware of? I know you mentioned some things on last episode. Anything else that you want to share?
Yes. Last night, in the early hours of the morning at 1 a.m., I finished a draft of another long investigative piece about Led Zeppelin, which is legally very sensitive. It's about their taxes, essentially, which people get a bit nervous about taxes. And I have sought advice from the leading international tax lawyer on it, who has given me some very good advice. I'm hoping to publish that on the week beginning August 7th. So fingers crossed that does make it through to fruition.
Well, and not to dive too deep in that story, but are we talking taxes in the early 70s or just in general as Led Zeppelin as a whole?
We are talking very specifically 1977, when Led Zeppelin went to tour the US. They did something really fascinating, and it has taken weeks to unpick this story, and we finally got there last night.
Exclusive. Cool. And Eric, what's going on, man? What's new?
Too much. I was going to say...
what are you going to share with us?
The entire Bath Festival film. No.
Right.
I was going to say I got a good laugh because James has been keeping me updated on this 1977 story. And I'm not going to spoil who it was or anything, but he reached out to somebody and the only thing they could say was, "Sorry, James, I can't help you." And then he responded to him again, like saying, "I'm sure, like, hey, like, can you explain, like, what do you mean by that?" And he just went, "I cannot help you."
Right.
So tune in to Monday where we reveal Led Zeppelin's ongoing tax fraud. No. Yeah. But it's just a funny thing to see in my inbox.
Yes, it's absolutely fascinating. As the Bath Festival shows, like, there's still live issues with the band, right? Like, stuff shows up, people are sensitive on things. Like, it's not like this is stuff that isn't ongoing. Like, there are still stories to be told here.
Lovely. And thank you so much, James, for bringing it to us.
No, it's my pleasure. No, it's my pleasure, and great to chat to you, Mark, and sort of run through it all.
Always, always. Well, on that note, thanks everybody for joining me, and you have a wonderful night, James. You have a great afternoon, Eric. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Mark. Always a pleasure to be here.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much, James, for reaching out to me and sharing the story with me and wanting to come on and share it with everybody as well. Thanks, Eric, for helping out with the story, of course, and sharing your knowledge of video. That's always greatly appreciated. So as I said at the beginning of the show, we do have a screener copy. And what happened was we received the screener copy after this initial interview was done. So we did the interview a week or two ago, and then we eventually got the screener copy from Kino Libraries, which we thank greatly for it, for providing us a screener so we could do the research of the Peter Whitehead films from the Bath Festival. I'll do my best to explain what's on the screener copy. As a lot of you may already know, some of this footage from Kino Library is up on YouTube, so you could definitely go check it out. I think there's three clips from YouTube that feature the live footage and then offstage footage. So what we find with the screener copy is just a little bit more of the same, right? It's just more of it. On the screener copy we received, it was approximately 2 hours in length. As James and Eric mentioned, back in the 70s, there was a black and white transfer at some point as two. So with this 2 hour footage, there was 30 minutes of black and white footage included, and which was mainly duplicate of the color footage.
But the great thing is this ties the story together, right? Now we know where the black and white footage is. We know what was transferred in theory. So as I mentioned, 2 hours of footage, 30 minutes of that is the black and white footage. So that leaves us with about 90 minutes of Bath Festival footage. Now, before that, we jump into this. Keep in mind, a lot of it's just more the same that's already out there. There might be a little bit more live, a lot more audience, a lot more backstage and people walking around and so forth. But I'll do my best to dive into this, kind of talk about what's on the video. As far as I'm aware of, I think, and Eric mentioned as well, there's about 10 minutes of live Led Zeppelin that's on the YouTube clips. So we'll kind of go with that from the beginning. We'll kind of go with that as a base. We will do our best math to kind of add up and see what's available of actual live footage of the band. So let's see what we could do to kind of get into this. So let's dive into this now. And I believe, I'm not 100% sure, but it looks like from the movie clapper that was used during these clips, it looks like most of this footage was filmed by Ernie Vince, which is the name of one of the filmers that James and Eric mentioned. The other filmer was Peter Whitehead. It looks like Ernie filmed a lot of the footage where Peter shot clips here and there and walked around more and kind of got exterior shots and so forth. Ernie's footage starts off, which I think is one of the coolest things myself out of all this footage. I'm just going to say that right off the bat. But the footage starts off, it has about 90 seconds of Jimmy Page walking out of the camper, walking all the way to the stage. And the cool thing about it is Jimmy's holding his acoustic guitar and he's got his Gibson strung around his neck. So, I mean, he doesn't have his roadies carried out to him. They're not in cases. He's ready to play. He gets out of the camper, being filmed. He walks through the crowd, greets some of the people from the crowd, walks to the stage, and then he's in the inside of the stage. And what's interesting, the stage almost looks like a hangar. If you look at it, it's a tin housing structure. It must, I don't know how it must be for sound because it must be real tinty actually. You could see him inside there. So he goes inside the hangar. That's about 90 seconds. Next we have Robert. Robert Plant is walking towards the stage. He's joined by his wife, Maureen. So they're walking to the stage. Again, very dramatic. It'd be great if, and all this stuff is silent, but you know, when you watch this, you could just picture the crowd, people talking, the wind blowing and so forth. And Plant, he doesn't have that usual humorous look on his face. He looks pretty serious about this gig. So he may be a little bit nervous. It was a big gig for him. So we have about 60 seconds of him walking towards the stage. And now we have the band backstage in the hangar. So as I mentioned, I call it a hangar. It just reminds me, it's a big open structure with these metal walls around it. And then there was a stage. So they're in the very back of it. Jimmy is sitting down, still with his Gibson in his hand, strung around his neck. You see Richard Cole walk up. And then you see Peter Grant walks up. And then it looks like Phil Carson, who is also a friend of the band, walk up behind him as well. So everybody's there. Then you see Jimmy and Robert standing there with Maureen on the side. So they're just waiting. There's a band maybe on, or they're waiting to go on stage. So they're just waiting to go. That's about 60 seconds total of them hanging out backstage. And then we get our first glimpse of John Paul Jones. He's backstage, has his bass on, has that leather jacket, those crazy pants. I believe the same thing he wore at Madison Square Garden, 1970. So you see the bands huddling up, a lot of friends of the bands with them as well. Looks like everybody's smoking cigarettes. That clip lasts about a minute. And then from there, we have about 4 minutes or so of a little bit of the audience and then the band on stage, Immigrant Song. With 4 minutes of Immigrant Song, if you actually look at the footage that's available that's on YouTube, it's a very short Immigrant Song. So this is a lot more footage. So we have 4 minutes of Immigrant Song as the band plays, and we'll get into the other footage on down the road. But with that being said, it sounds like this is a multi-clip Immigrant Song, right? Because we have two angles of the same song. So 4 minutes of Immigrant Song. Next, we have some audience clips, about 2 minutes and of Heartbreaker. So this is where you see the clip behind the stage, looking down, you see the drums, you see Page and Plant and so forth. About 2 minutes of Heartbreaker. And then we have Dazed and Confused. So we have about 2 minutes of Dazed and Confused. We have John Paul Jones, really close up, of course. I mean, these guys love shooting close ups. As you know, if you've seen any of the footage, they're dead on the shoes. They're as close as possible to Robert's face or John Paul Jones or John Bonham's. But there's about 2 minutes of Dazed and Confused. Really great stuff there, too. You really see Jones just ripping up on the bass, which is pretty amazing. Then the other treat after that, we have Bring It On Home. We have 4 minutes of Bring It On Home. Now, keep in mind, this is not all live footage. Some of it's cut in between the audience, but as a whole, it's about 4 minutes of Bring It On Home. Again, a lot longer than what's the footage already on YouTube. Beautiful stuff. Another 3 minutes after that's mainly audience just panning around. Then we have, here's the big one. We have 8 minutes of the organ solo and Thank You. So we have John Paul Jones at the keyboard, super close up, him playing the keys. The filmer really loved to go into and pan the audience during this. So he'd film John Paul Jones and film the audience. Super close up of John Paul Jones' face, plant hitting that tambourine during Thank You, which is pretty amazing. And then at the very end, or close to the very end, Bonham hitting the gong, right? Bam, bam. So it's just pretty intense. And that's 8 minutes total. And then we cut to That's the Way. So we have about 4 minutes, almost 4 minutes of That's the Way. So really great acoustics, seeing the band sit down and play just really shows you the energy of these guys and how relaxed they are being able to play this song in front of such a huge audience. And that is somewhat of the live footage from Ernie's camera. Now we have some other footage coming up that is possibly would be my guess is from Peter Whitehead. And we'll kind of dive into that as we talk more about this footage. So just from Ernie's footage alone, that gives us about almost 30 minutes of Led Zeppelin at Bath Festival. So, and again, a lot of this footage is intermixed with audience, but it's the same song. So as I was mentioning, they were filming the song and they might pan to the audience and they might get some other clips intermixed with that. But this is that part of the song. So there's about 30 minutes or so of Ernie's footage. So next we have some backstage footage. This could be before the show. This could be after, you know, depending on how it's transferred, it could be after, but we have backstage. We see John Paul Jones, hanging out with some people. He's wearing a pink hat, which is pretty cool. We see Phil Carson standing there. We see Donovan walking in and out. So it's just more of, you know, a lot of crowd. So not too much Zeppelin content in that, but, you know, we do see some with John Paul Jones. So from there, we're back to the stage and they're setting up. So one of the cool things, if anybody remembers seeing this YouTube clip, is someone has this cool green Led Zeppelin shirt, a crew member, a roadie, and it says Led Zeppelin. And I believe on the back, it says Jigsaw T-shirts. So if anybody has one of those shirts, those authentic shirts, please contact me. I'm dying to get a hold of it. But we see him setting up. We see him putting the answers. Not a lot of people on stage setting up. It looks like he's the only guy setting up as a roadie. So hopefully there's more there. But there's about 12 minutes of that, right? So stage setup, audience, and all sorts of stuff. And then we have some more, a little bit more footage of Grant talking to Richard Cole, which is pretty cool. Quick clip. Grant, again, big imposing figure, speaking to Richard Cole, who's the tour manager, and then we have a lot more crowd. So that sums up that footage. That's about an hour total, right? So if you think about it, or if you look at what we just discussed, we have about 30 minutes of live footage on there, the Zeppelin, including a little bit of audience, and then we have the backstage footage before they went on, actually. So a lot of that, the additional 30 minutes, even though we have John Paul Jones, we have Richard Cole, we have Peter Grant, a lot of it's just crowd and people walking around. Then we move on. On the other file I received, this is the one that had the 30 minutes black and white footage. And then kind of scanning through the black and white footage, it was pretty apparent that this was another transfer of stuff that's already in color. So we know it's not additional footage. We know it's just a copy in black and white. And as I mentioned earlier, this kind of sums up what James talked about through his research, that through the documentation they found that there was a black and white transfer made. So, you know, kind of put two and two together and use a little bit of Led Zeppelin assumption, this could be the black and white footage. So after the black and white footage, we have about three more minutes of Peter Grant, Robert with his wife Maureen by the car. John's there. John's walking by. Then he kind of just stops and starts talking to Robert. I'd love to hear that conversation, right? Robert takes off his shirt from what he was wearing. I believe he had a button-down shirt. And then he puts on that stage outfit that he had, you know, that dark black long sleeve. I think it has little flowers on there. And then during that time, he's also talking to Bonzo. I believe Bonzo was drinking a cup of coffee, or just, I should say, Bonzo was drinking something out of a styrofoam cup. So that's about 3 minutes. We then cut to about 90 more seconds of the camper, people inside the camper. I believe it's Mick Bonham in there. We have Robert in there. We have John Bonham in there. We have Maureen. Everyone's sitting down. Camper's a mess. Everyone's smoking. Richard Cole's in there hanging out. And again, some of this footage is already seen on YouTube. So it's just a little bit additional more footage of what's available. Then outside the camper, I believe we have Julie Felix. And I believe we have Donovan walking in and out. So from here, after this backstage footage, we're going to have some more live footage, quite possibly from Peter Whitehead's film camera now. We have 2 minutes of the bow. So again, earlier we had Dazed and Confused, but this was more of John Bonham, a lot of John Paul Jones. And this one has, of course, the classic bow solo on there. And then after that, we see more of the backstage of Jimmy Page, and I believe he's sitting with Donovan just back there waiting. They show some clips of the audience, and then next thing you know, Page is sitting with his Gibson picking along, you know, playing a little bit in the back. Then all of a sudden, they all walk up. They walk to the front of the stage and start Immigrant Song, and this is the clip that's on YouTube, right, where you see them kind of all walk in. They bust into YouTube, so great, great angle there. Then we go into Heartbreaker. And then again, Heartbreaker is about 30 seconds or so, it looks like. And then we have more Dazed and Confused. So how this got mixed up from the Dazed and Confused bow to this one, who knows? But now we have more Dazed and Confused. And, you know, by looking at this, it looks like Peter Whitehead shot a lot of small clips. He didn't film very long. So Dazed and Confused, about 45 seconds. We have then Thank You, which is about 60 seconds. And then if we remember on Ernie's footage, it's about 8 minutes total of the solo in Thank You. So Thank You is about 60 seconds. Here's something that's really interesting. After this, it's dark, right? It's like, and you can tell it's just kind of a reddish light on there. It's dark outside now. It's no longer a day concert. So the footage kind of takes on a new look. And I, you know, of course, being a Zeppelin fan and being, you know, into video, I liked it quite a bit. Of course, the daylight stuff's cool, but, you know, nighttime, it's like a red lights on them. They have like almost a flickering light in the front too that does a carousel of different colors. So that's there as well. But then we have Moby Dick. So this is dark footage, a little bit dark. You could still see John. There's about 6 minutes of Moby Dick footage on there, which is really cool. So I know, Eric, you're going to really love that. And then we have another, just a lot of quick clips at the end here. We have about 60 seconds. I believe it's how many more times. The band, you could see them throwing Frisbees into the audience. So there must have been complimentary Frisbees. I've never seen any Frisbees that said Bath Vessel or anything. So they were probably just free Frisbees. But you see Jimmy chucking Frisbees in the audience. You see Plant. Even Richard Cole comes up with some Frisbee and just throws it in the audience. So that's really cool. Then they go into Whole Lot of Love, and this is where you see this really red flashing light, right? The band's just illuminated in red, and it's just kind of flashing. And there's about 3 minutes of it, so it's definitely, you know, some good stuff there. And then we have about another 2.5 minutes of just flashing red lights, the band playing. And then at the end, Jimmy comes up to the mic. It's probably the end of Whole Lot of Love. He comes up to the mic and says something. So maybe he says good night. Maybe he says thank you for being here. I'll have to go back to the live tape and take a listen to it, but that's pretty cool. That's about 2.5 minutes. And then at the very end, we have what's, I believe it's, is it Bring It On Home? Where Bonham's standing up and clapping. And then he sits down on his drum kit and plays. So that wraps it up. I mean, that's another couple more minutes of that, but I mean, that's it. I'm looking at it from a silent perspective, right? There's no audience, but there's no sync on it. So it's, you know, I'm kind of deciphering it and seeing what songs they are. But yeah, I mean, with this stuff with sound would be just remarkable. I think the purpose of this is to really just show you out of this rumor of Bath Festival and being the Holy Grail for so many years, right? For decades upon decades. It's finally here, and we know what it was used for thanks to James and his incredible story. It wasn't necessarily used for like a full feature film. Could have been a documentary part or something to be aired on TV because the songs aren't complete. I mean, they just kind of filmed them. So I'm not sure exactly what the thought process is behind there. I just have to say thank goodness it was film because this is a huge part of Led Zeppelin history. So this is a welcome treat. All I could hope for is that Led Zeppelin do have a soundboard of this tape. To wrap it all up, there's about 90 minutes of Bath footage total. And again, I would assume there's about 30 minutes of Zeppelin. Now, I know I mentioned some other Zeppelin after Ernie's footage. I mentioned Peter Whitehead's filming. So I know that's, you know, another 10, 15 minutes. So my guess is those would all intermix into somewhat of a multi-camera. Towards the end, it could be a little bit different because we do have a whole lot of love and so forth. So, you know, you're looking at about 35 minutes total, I would guess. 35, maybe even 40 minutes of Led Zeppelin material. So pretty outstanding stuff. Even though it's segments, I mean, they're long enough to really appreciate it. They're close enough and clean enough to really appreciate it. So I really hope I did a good job explaining that. I know it's kind of overwhelming because I'm just reading my notes from what I took and just me trying to explain it. I feel like I don't do it justice because it is a really remarkable to see. I strongly recommend anyone or everyone to go look on YouTube. Go check it out. See what we're talking about. I believe some people might have synced it up and put it on YouTube. If I'm not mistaken, that was pulled off YouTube. But I know there, if you look hard enough, you may be able to find it. I'm not sure, but search Kino Library Led Zeppelin on YouTube and it'll come up and you'll see these three remarkable clips. Yeah, I believe it. If you go to ledzeppelin.com and go into the video section under 1970, they also have the clips that's easier to access from YouTube. Well, that's enough of me talking. Thanks again for listening. And, you know, a huge shout out to James Cook for doing Led Zeppelin News. It's a fantastic resource. He is coming up with some amazing news stories, that stuff we would never even imagine. So definitely check out ledzeppelinnews.com. I believe he has a premium plan, so it's only $5 a month. So strongly recommend that. I think that's it. So listen, again, thanks, James. Thanks, Eric, for part one, part two, episode 15 and episode 16 of talking about these Peter Whitehead films from 1970. Remarkable story. Just blew my mind when I read it. Thank you so much, James. Everybody, go watch Royal Albert Hall. Go watch Led Zeppelin DVD. You know, listen to some Zeppelin. Do your thing, but listen to Zeppelin while you do it, all right? Thank you for joining me. We look forward to bringing you more exclusive Led Zeppelin content in this podcast. If you have any suggestions, contact at zeppfan.com. I am Mark McFall. I want everyone to have a great evening or a great day. Crank out Zeppelin. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.